Boost your self-care routine this fall with Fresh Thyme Market's Vitamins and Body Care Sale. Take advantage of big savings and enjoy 30% off all wellness items department-wide from Wednesday, October 15th to Tuesday, the 21st. Take better care of you and your wallet with savings on nourishing skincare, immune-boosting supplements, and plant-based protein powder. Stop by your neighborhood Fresh Thyme Market today, where healthy living is made easy.
Welcome back to The Bulwark Goes to Hollywood. My name is Sonny Bunch. I'm the culture editor at The Bulwark. I'm very pleased to be joined today by John Mass. John Mass is Executive Vice President of Content Partners, LLC, a Variety 2020 Dealmakers honoree. Mr. Mass has the unique combination of experience in finance, production, and talents management that makes him an expert in this field. I'm really interested in Content Partners and what you guys do because, you know, you guys own a lot of movies but aren't a studio, which is kind of a weird combination, right? You've got the rights to 13 Going on 30, Black Hawk Down, Black Swan, three of my favorite movies across a variety of genres. And then also CSI, you own 50% of CSI, is my understanding. Again, you're not making new movies. You're basically selling these movies to other content platforms. Is that right?
Partially. First of all, thanks for having me on your show. Yeah. We actually use third parties, major studios, to do the distribution of our content. So we will own them and use best-in-class distributors to then sell those into the marketplace via various distribution channels and media.
Okay. So one of the stories that I was reading on your guys' site is about at the end of last year, you picked up a bunch of movies, but including amongst them Olympus Has Fallen and Insidious, right? Mm-hmm. So these are two movies that have kind of surprisingly spawned these big franchises. They're huge hits. My question then is, do you own the underlying IP, the intellectual property that you can then use to make more sequels and more TV shows if you want to do that sort of thing, whatever? Or is it just the rights to those films that you can then, you know, lease to Netflix or distribute through Blu-ray, that sort of thing?
It's a good question. The answer is sort of dependent on the content. So some of the films that we own the entire film. We own the underlying IP rights. We own all the distribution rights. We own the film. Other films we may own a percent of, an economic interest in, but don't own the distribution rights or do not have the sequel and remake rights to make a 13 Going on 30 or 14 mm-hmm. Going on 40, whatever the movie might sure. be going forward. So, but we, it just is dependent on, you know, what we bought at the time.
Mm-hmm. And how do you, I'm curious what the actual negotiation process with this is like. So do you go to the studios themselves who originally made it? Do you go to the producers? Like, what is the actual back and forth like?
Well, we buy from a number of different sources. It could be talent, you know, writers, directors, actors, producers who have an economic interest in a TV show or a movie or music, you know, a musician who may have royalties in their music that they own, and will purchase their interest. It's a profit participation or royalty interest that they have in perpetuity in the rights to that content, and we could buy out that interest. So if you had a 10% interest in a TV show that you wrote and you were receiving compensation on an annual, semi-annual, quarterly basis from the studio or network that produced that show, we could accelerate those payments to you, give you the money today for what would mm-hmm. be a perpetuity payment, and then we take over the both risk and reward of that economic interest. In that case, we're buying, you know, a percentage. You know, we have no distribution rights. We don't own the underlying IP associated with it, but we own the economic interest. In other situations, we might be going to a financier who actually financed an entire movie and they own it 100%. They had it distributed through a third party, maybe a bit major studio, and they're seeking to liquidate, you know, to pay back their investors or have liquidity event for themselves, and we'll buy it from them. And then we'll control not only the economic interest, but also those distribution rights and underlying IP rights that they owned. So it all depends. It could be a financier, it could be a producer, it could be a more like a Wall Street investor, someone who has invested alongside the studios is looking for liquidity. They take a lot of different forms, and of course artists, yeah, as I said at the beginning.
Yeah, the back end stuff is very interesting to me because I think people don't, I don't think people will fully understand how both actors and writers and directors and everything get paid for some of these movies. So, you know, there's a difference between residuals and profit points and all of that. I was wondering if you could just break for a very basic audience like myself, if you could just break down the differences between those and kind of how you go about buying each of them out.
Well, we don't buy out residuals, or we haven't bought out residuals in the past. Residuals are payments that are made at compensation that has been negotiated through collective bargaining agreements by guilds to ensure that its members receive a share of an economic interest in something going forward after a show or a film has been made. Those are residual payments. And we don't, those are usually don't rise in size to a percentage of a film where you have a percentage of the profits. And that's something that goes on, you know, in each of the guilds. Guilds meaning the unions that represent it for your listeners who don't have unions that represent writers, directors, actors, you know, whoever might be involved in a show. The other form of a form of compensation for an artist is you write a movie, you get paid $1 million to make a movie, God willing, you have a successful script and someone wants to buy it and pay $1 million for it. You might also get paid contingent compensation. It's $1 million against the share of the profits of the movie. That profit participation is highly negotiated by your representatives. And that definition, the equation for determining what that economic interest, your net profit or modified adjusted gross profit or whatever it might be, however they define it, is defined and put into a contract. As a film is released and money starts coming in, those revenues go against expenses, distribution costs, distribution expenses, P&A or prints and advertising, what it costs to promote that movie or it could be marketing expenses of a TV show. At the end of the day, interest, because there's interest if money is borrowed either internally at a studio or externally, you pay interest. And all those things are charged against till you get to what your definition is in what is called a waterfall. So money comes in, it goes through a waterfall, things are charged off against it. And finally, it gets to you because you've now paid back all those costs and you start receiving, let's say it was $1 million against 5% of some definition of net profits, and you start to receive your 5% interest, and that goes on in perpetuity. What we buy, and hopefully it's not too long of an answer to your really good question, is we buy what we call the long tail, right? We're buying after the film's come out, it's been fairly seasoned, it's been out for several or many years, and now we're buying the long tail. The economic interest in a film or TV show goes on forever. It may not be as steep as it was early on in its life, but it creates, it's generating cash, and we're buying that in perpetuity. And that's how we go about that. That's essentially what net profits are, or profit participation is, and what we'd be buying.
This is what you just described is the famous Hollywood math. Of course, this is the kind of, you know, the ways in which profits are decided and distributed. But it is really interesting to me because I do think that we are in kind of a weird and brave new world almost of you know, streamers and how you kind of determine, you know, what. When you sell something to Netflix, you know, and when it is watched however many times, how do you determine, you know, how people get paid for that and how the profit participation breaks down? It almost sounds to me like you're basically just making it all much simpler for everyone.
Well, I think it's complicated. I think it's, you know, purchasing economic interest in films and television shows, music, I'll set aside because it's different math, as you said, than film and television, is complicated. It's very esoteric. And it's complicated because you're essentially buying something on a net profit basis. You have to really understand all the costs that go against revenues, and you have to understand all the sources of revenues that can be brought in for a film or television show. As you mentioned, you know, you have streaming, you have Blu-ray, you have 4K, you have all these different media that generate revenue, and then there are expenses associated against it. It's not easy. It's not simple. And understanding the economics or the math, as you say, is what allows you to hopefully make good purchases as opposed to bad ones, you know, making mistakes. So fortunately, we've been fortunate. You know, we've made some good purchases. We have great partnerships and relationships in the industry with people who have sold their interests. I think, it's been win-win for us in the business that we're in. But it's different because you refer to it as Hollywood math. You know, it's just complicated accounting to understand, and it's a complicated business. Whereas music is more works on a gross basis. So you really don't have to understand all the expenses associated with it. Pennies per play, understanding all that, you don't have to understand. Sure. You're just buying cash flow.
Yeah. You mentioned 4K and Blu-ray, and I have to ask because I'm one of the holdouts. I'm a physical media person. I've got a big wall full of movies, much to my wife's chagrin. Mm-hmm. Do you foresee seeing what you've seen without discussing any specifics, but seeing what you've seen with cash flows from streaming versus physical media, is there a future there, or is it on the way out?
I'm sorry to say, Sonny, but but there is not a future there. You know, if you look at the economics of physical media, Blu-ray, you know, DVD, it's going down every year at an alarming rate. It's not zero, certainly, and that's why Redbox still exists, and that's why if you go to Walmart, Target, you'll see the bins of DVD still. It's not zero, but it's going down very quickly. And remember, there was a time 20 years ago when this was the largest generator. Blu-ray and DVD were the largest generator of revenue in the movie business by far. And it's just what's happened is it's moved on to other media, just like. I'm sure there was a big horse and buggy business at the turn of the 20th century, okay? And it has moved on to other businesses, right? So
yeah. Similar kind of question, but slightly different. I'm curious about the breakdown between VOD, like, you know, price per, essentially pay-per-view. Like, I rent something for 48 hours from Amazon versus streaming. My understanding, again, is that Netflix pays or whoever pays a certain amount of money, you get the rights to it for 2 years or whatever. Does the pay-per-view model make more economic sense than the... than the like big single purchase streaming model, or what works best for you as the rights owner?
Well, I think the jury's out on that, right? We're just experiencing, you know, what we call in the business windowing, right? The windowing of you know, you have a theatrical window, then you might have a VOD or pay-per-view window, then you have pay television, you know, the normal windowing. So you knew you had to wait 6 months for the DVD to come out. And then after the DVD came out, then you might see it on another media. So that windowing is changing. We're seeing that right now with Black Widow, where you have what is called overlapping of windows. It used to be that they were very defined so that you could maximize, these studios felt we maximize revenues by windowing it. And as we move down the sort of meat, you know, food chain of distribution, we're maximizing revenues. Now what you're seeing is they're experimenting with day and date release, or maybe it's a 2 week theatrical release. And then after that, you overlap theatrical with a VOD window, or what they call PVOD, right? And,
sure.
And so, or TVOD, transactional video on demand. It's unclear right now. They're still trying to experiment with it. My feeling, you know, as a rights holder, has historically been, let's maximize the revenue, okay, window to window. But what's happening is, just like you can't let go of your DVDs and Blu-rays on, and probably Laserdiscs somewhere in your house, you know,
HD DVD. That's a
story. Okay, HD DVD. You know, it just as you have a hard time letting go. You know, I'm having a hard time letting go of this. The world is changing. The way people experience entertainment is changing. We're seeing this at the box office. Over the last year and a half with this pandemic, people have changed their viewing habits and how they experience it. People have bought bigger TVs, bought, you know, better sound in their home, and they're making a choice. Do I want to go to the movie theater to go see that and have that experience, or do I want to do that in my home? And as that evolves, the windowing is going to continue to evolve. The jury's still out. As I said, the studios are still experimenting with it. And comparing that to their competitors like Netflix, like, how should I do this? And we'll see. You know, historically, to answer your question, historically, we think the windowing maximizes revenue, but it's changing. We don't have control over that. We just don't have control over that.
Yeah, I mean, it is. It's a weird and interesting time. I am a box office junkie. I mean, before the pandemic, every, you know, Saturday morning, I'd wake up and the first thing I'd look at on my phone is, you know, the numbers on Deadline. I'd be like, what did, you know, what overperformed and underperformed? And it's just impossible to get any sense of how these things are working right now. But that's new stuff. You guys are mostly focused on library content, is my understanding. And that's another really interesting area, because you have, for instance, Amazon picking up MGM, which comes with a big library, not as big as it used to be. MGM sold some of that off years ago to Warner Brothers, but still a pretty big library. And that seems to be, as much as the underlying IP, that seems to be the big draw for Amazon, as best as I can tell, because I know that people sign up for Netflix or HBO Max or whatever because of the new stuff, right? They want the hot new show. But what keeps them around, right, is when you're scrolling through and you're like, well, what am I going to watch? I want to watch something. What am I going to watch today? What is your sense of the MGM Amazon thing, but also just like the value of a library as opposed to, you know, hot new content?
Well, I'll start with the latter question. So first, I think that comfort food, you know, the library content, if you look at the most viewed content on the streaming platforms, they're quite often in the top 10 library shows. I'm not sure where they stand at Netflix right now, but I know for a long time, over the last couple of years, Grey's Anatomy and Criminal Minds were two very highly viewed shows on that platform. Those shows, one's still in production, right, at ABC, so it lags the original episodes, but it's still in production. But they have 15, 16 years of seasons of episodes there that are being viewed on Netflix, and it's been a big hit. Criminal Minds hasn't been on the air for a few years and is still a very, you know, much viewed television show. Friends, which was on Netflix for a long time, and there was an article a couple of years ago when the Friends HBO Max had not yet launched. I think Netflix made a deal. I think it was rumored to be $100 million for one year to have all the episodes of Friends. Seinfeld just recently went to Netflix. Office went to Peacock. I think the reason this is because people like comfort food. Their comfort food. They like the known, right? When you can't find something with all the choice that you have on these streaming platforms, and you can't find something new that you're interested or investing in, you go to or resort to something that's comfortable and known to you. Fortunately, we own CSI. We own 50% of that. Mm-hmm. It is, you know, it was 800 or 900 episodes of that show in its various incarnations, whether it's CSI Vegas or New York or Cyber. And Miami, of course. And I think people resort to what is familiar. You know, they look at news shows, you know, and look at Bridgerton. You know, this year, you know, Bridgerton was a huge success. And they also still rely on comfort food. It's a balance. And I think if you look at any of the big streaming platforms, they have library content that is highly viewed. It may not be what they market, right? You market the sizzle, you market the hot new show, but it is something that they really rely on for viewers to stay with them. And I think that leads into your second question about MGM is Amazon, you know, there's a lot has happened. There's been a lot of movement of chairs at the table. Sony just made a deal with Netflix to send both new films and library content to Netflix and then have a second window. Remember, we were talking about windowing, have a second window after it's been on Netflix for a period of time. It goes to Disney and the Disney channels, various channels that Disney has and controls. So that leaves other players like, where am I going to get my content from? If I assume, you know, Starz is owned by Lionsgate. Lionsgate's going to make the decision. Well, we got to make sure that Starz gets content because we just lost Sony to Netflix. So maybe Lionsgate is going to be sending their films to Starz to ensure that they have content. And MGM's looking at themselves. And as we have this siloing effect among streamers, HBO, you know, Warner Discovery, you know, now is not going to do business with Disney. Disney's not going to do business with Amazon. Amazon's not going to, these are going to do business with Universal. For the most part, they're very siloed. Yes, there's some licenses that are done across various platforms. Paramount has a deal with Universal and Peacock. But for the most part, a lot of these companies are siloed. They only do business with themselves. And I think Amazon is looking around at their offering. And remember, MGM's a lot different than these other streamers because Amazon's a lot different than these streamers because they're really supporting another business, which is Amazon Prime, just like Apple. Apple Plus, it's not about a streaming platform. It's about the Apple experience and delivering an experience and value to its consumer. Same thing with Amazon. They want to deliver to the Amazon Prime viewer. And in order to deliver, they're going to deliver great shows like, let's say, Bosch, which is, you know, a great television show, or they'll deliver other Mrs. Maisel or other shows that they will deliver. But they can't just count on delivering hit TV shows or Jack Ryan. They also have to look at having library content. And by buying MGM, they're letting their consumers know that you're going to have a library content that you're going to be able to choose from. It may not be why they sign up for Amazon Prime. They're going to sign up for Amazon Prime because they get one-day shipping. They get free shipping, or it's going to be at their house in 1 or 2 days, and they have a choice. But they're just delivering more and more value. And this is part of delivering value, is that they want to deliver a library. And eventually, I think they see the underlying IP inside the MGM library for sequels and remakes that they could turn into new content. But the Amazon decision for buying MGM is much bigger than, oh, we just want to have, you know, films. It's really delivering for that prime audience, which is very, very important to them.
Yeah, I mean, it's a really interesting. I'm still curious to see if it runs into regulatory hurdles. Washington now seems to be sticking their nose in to see what's happening there. It's very complex and interesting. And I'm super curious to see what they do out of that.
I have an idea, Sonny, what they might do.
Yes,
if I may,
please.
I don't mean to cut you off.
So go, please,
you're
please
a, because you said what you said about being a real videophile and watching box office. So they own a box office service, right? They own, they list what box office goes because they own, was it Box Office Mojo? Isn't that the one that they own?
Yeah, I think Box Office Mojo is part of IMDb.com, which is all owned by Amazon.
Right. So Jeff Bezos is brilliant. Okay, I'm not the first person to say that. But think about this. Do you think it was like coincidental that the first acquisition that Amazon made was IMDb. That was the first, one of their first acquisitions they ever made was IMDb. And that was like 20 years ago. Okay.
Yeah.
And IMDb, for those in your audience who don't know, is a video file's dream, right? It has all the credits for every show and every movie ever made. And they're hot linked to bios and to all the people's other credits. It's a huge database of content information, so that when you're watching Amazon, and I'm sure you're an Amazon Prime viewer. Are you an Amazon?
Sure,
Amazon Prime?
Of course.
And you hit, they have what's called X-ray feature, right? Watching. And I hit pause and I'm watching Jack Ryan, let's say. I hit pause. Oh, in this scene is John Krasinski. Oh, well, what else has John Krasinski been in? And I could look into it and I could read his bio right there online. Well, now imagine if they have an X-ray feature inside of Amazon Prime TV that allows you to, wow, Krasinski's wearing really cool sunglasses. Who makes those sunglasses? Oh, those are Ray-Ban sunglasses. I'd like to buy those. And you could click through and just sort of in-app purchase, in the Amazon app purchase.
Yeah.
I'm not saying it's a hypothetical. I think that that's what's happening. They're going to take that X-ray feature a little bit further, and it's really brilliant. And what they're doing is guaranteeing a greater share of people's wallets. That's what you're trying to do, is get a greater share of wallet and continue to deliver utility to the Prime member, which is essentially taking a page out of Sam Walton's playbook from when Walmart was started. Constantly give the consumer a reason to go into Walmart to buy something there, as opposed to walking down the street to the next store. And that's what Amazon is doing. And I think that idea, the X-ray feature, taking it into in-app purchases, is sort of the next thing that they will do.
Yeah. I mean, I had never really thought about this, but with the X-ray feature and with their ownership of IMDb, I'm sure they can cross-reference everything that you're looking up in terms of, okay, this is what people are interested in. This is, this is what's hot on the star meter today. Let me ask a question here about from your perspective as both a content provider and as a consumer, as a customer, is the current model of everybody having a streaming service, Peacock, Paramount Plus, et cetera, is that sustainable, or are we headed toward at least a little bit of consolidation here in the next few years? I mean, I feel like there are so many different options for people that we are headed toward a cost apocalypse as much as anything else. I just don't know that people will be able to afford it.
Right. I said to somebody less than a year ago, I said, look, you're going to have consolidation. It's not so sustainable. And we have seen it since I said that. Look, Warner and Discovery, right? They essentially said, we're not going to go it alone, right? Discovery's not going to just have Discovery Plus alone as an offering, may not be enough to compete. And AT&T said, we aren't going to go it alone. So they joined forces. They thought that was so. You've already seen consolidation, right? Between two very big media companies consolidated to say, in order to go toe to toe with, let's say, the other three larger companies, Netflix, Amazon, and Disney, we need to combine, right? So that's what. And I think what everyone is sort of saying, and at least what I hear, is how many, like many things, how many as we cut the cord for cable, more and more people cut the cord and decide what they need, how many of these streaming services do we need, right? Well, I think many people are saying right now, of the people that have streaming, I think the statistic, and you may know this, Sonny, is like 95% of all people who have streaming in their home have Netflix, okay? So then it's the battle for second, which is probably Disney, and then Amazon Prime is a little bit different because it's part of a bigger package. Same thing with Apple. So you're battling for third and fourth. Is Paramount Plus part of that? Is Peacock, which is more an AVOD play than a subscription play, but AVOD, is Peacock part of that? I think that is what everyone is trying to figure out. How many of these do I need? Is HBO Max one of them? Or whatever, I guess we'll call it HBO, Discovery, whatever the combined entity looks like, is that one of them? And I think that that's still to be determined. But I do believe that all these companies that I've mentioned are not going to be operating on a standalone basis a couple years from now, that there will be some combination. Yeah. And already, you know, there's rumors just this week that Universal or Comcast and Viacom are having conversations of having some type of collaboration in streaming, whether that's domestic or international, offering to compete in the marketplace.
Yeah.
And don't forget,
that'd be a huge one. Yeah. That'd be very big.
Yeah. Very big.
All right. Well, that was everything I wanted to talk to you about. I always like to end these interviews by asking if there's anything I should have asked, if there's anything you think listeners should know about your business, about the world of streaming, about the world of content, you know, management, IP massaging, that sort of stuff. What should folks know?
I think entertainment's an interesting business. It is a business at the end of the day. And while it's something that we love to watch and enjoy and experience, there is a business behind it. And what we've seen over the last couple of years is the business side of it. A lot of combinations and divestitures, right? So a lot of people may be saying to you, Sonny, well, what's going to happen? You know, there's so many combinations going on, so much consolidation, but we've seen this before. Remember, company in the 1960s and 70s, Gulf Western owned Paramount.
Sure.
And, you know,
sure.
And three or four different entities over the last 20 years have owned Universal. And, you know, we've seen a lot of combinations over the years and then divestitures. There was a time when a company called AOL owned Time Warner. Well, then, you know, it was owned by two other entities. Yeah. It was a standalone, then owned two other. Now it's combining with Discovery. This consolidation and breakup or divestitures happen over and over again. I think we are seeing right now where some of the consolidation that's happening will not be reversed because there's an inextricable need between the one company and the other, like Amazon and MGM. I don't think you see them divesting. I think they own it and that is it. Whereas yeah. others, you might see more divestitures going on. It's an exciting time, yeah. you know, as both from a content standpoint and how much content you get to see and so many great shows, like some of the best programming is being created now. And it's really exciting, but it's also a very exciting time for the business. So that's, yeah. I'll leave you
that's
with.
For sure. Yeah. That is for sure. John, thank you very much for being on the show. I really appreciate it. Again, I'm Sonny Bunch, culture editor at The Bulwark. We will be back next week with another episode of The Bulwark Goes to Hollywood. See you guys then.
Oh, the car from Carvana's here. Well, will you look at that? It's exactly what I ordered, like, precisely. It would be crazy if there were any catches. But there aren't, right?
Right. Because that's how car buying should be. With Carvana, you get the car you want. Choose delivery or pickup and a week to love it or return it.
Buy your car today with
Carvana.
Delivery or pickup fees may apply. Limitations and exclusions may apply. See our 7-day return policy at Carvana.com.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together. Because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.